Shavua Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf. And to celebrate our 100th daf on this wonderful Matzah Shabbos, we will start on Tzadik Tet Amud Beit, right at the bottom, where, remember, the Mishnah said that if the Gid HaNasha was cooked together with other gittim. Again, we didn't know which one was which. All of them are usr, which really does not seem to make sense. And as we said before, what happened to the idea that the Torah is matir us to be going with the din of bittul berov? After all, we're not talking about over here ta'am. We're talking about the question of the Yovesh B'Yovesh. We've got different pieces of Gid HaNasha, and the question is, how is it that all of them become usher? Forget about any questions of Tom, but over here, you're telling me that they're all usher themselves, even if there wasn't a problem of any kind of Tom. But why is that? We should go according to the din of Acharei Rabim Ma'atot, and we should go according to the Rof. Answers the Gemara with the very important din of Birya. So when we have something that is an actual Birya, now what exactly is Birya is not so pashut. Because, I mean, you could think a lot of things are Birya. It's like, is there maybe a piece of wheat would be a Birya? Because after all, a Birya is kosher. And so on. So, Lumaisa, if we take a look at the halacha in the Shulchan Aruch defines this halacha as follows. And there's many different dinim in this halacha, but the basic idea of it here is that birya is considered to be something which is, for instance, as the Shulchan Aruch, a nimala. So, we have an ant, or we have a full Gid HaNasha, or we have an Ov Tameh, or we have a full Eivor Min HaChai, or we have a Beitza, Sheyesh Ba Efroach. These cases are called Birya, and the din is Birya Afilu Be'elef Lo Batil. So please write this down. Don't know where our Gavi is tonight, but we can certainly write it down in the din of Tarovet. Birya Afilu Be'elef Lo Batil. But what makes it a birya? So, for instance, there are completely different dinim that have to be matched up in order for it to be considered to be a birya. So let's take a look in the Shulchan Aruch itself and read what the halacha is over there. It has to be, first of all, davar shehayabo chiyut. It's got to be something that was alive, but something that is a plant, for instance, so a chita, that is not considered to be a dover that is considered to be a birya. Furthermore, base, tzorech she dover she'osur mitchila briyato. It has to be that the iser is the very organism itself, not something that happened to the organism. So, for instance, it would have to be something that is initially, as it comes to life, it's usr. But let's say that you have an Ov Tahor, and that Ov Tahor became a nevela. Well, that's not considered to be a birya, because the Torah did not usr that birya. It just usr the nevela. It happens to be that this nevela is a birya, but there's no such isr as the actual birya at the same time. So that would be, let's say, an Ov Tahor should need not bail. That's not called a birya. Let's say you have an entire shor that became a shor haniska, and you would think that that's a birya. I mean, it's an entire shor. But the iser of it is something that happened incidentally after this organism, this birya, was made. And the fact that it also killed somebody, whatever made it a shor haniska, that's not considered to be a birya. And one other thing that is absolutely necessary, it has to be a dover shalem. But if it's not a dover shalem, it's just like broken up pieces. For instance, fat, chelev, Chelev is not a particular piece. You collect a piece of Chelev here, a piece of Chelev there, put it together to be a Kizayis of Chelev. That's not called a Birya. And therefore, it's not called something unless it is Shalem. So that means without those three, it's very important to keep that in consideration in terms of the definition. So that's what we mean when we say Birya Shiny. Then the next piece that we had in the Mishnah was either the case of the pieces of Gidan Dosh, and it fell in among other dinim of the Gidim. And then we had two other cases. A Chaticha of Nevela that fell into other pieces of meat. And then we talked about a fish that was treif, and a piece of fish fell into other pieces of fish. If you cannot identify the particular piece of fish, that's it. All of the pieces are tahar. Now that has nothing to do with, as we just saw, that has nothing to do with this idea of birya. So what's the reason why they wouldn't be a leaf? If the din of acharei rabim la'atot, the Torah says to go after the actual din of rov. Well, we've got 2-1 over here, so why actually would it not be considered to be a batel barov? Now, by the way, you should just know that this dinin of batel barov, there is a big machlokus about whether batel barov means that it is 2-1, or batel barov is whatever is slightly much as larger as the rest. This is a big machlokus in terms of the psak, and obviously it's part of taking into consideration various other issues that put together we are machmiran. But in any event, the question over here, how do we explain the pieces? Why aren't pieces batel baruba if they're not birias? So in order to understand the rest, let us remember the famous Mishnah. That is the Mishnah in Orla. And the Mishnah over there says that, it give it, please, Brene, I'm not feeling well. I'm sorry, I can't. So the question is, we find over there that there's various things that the Chachamim say are never going to be batel. And there's certain things that are considered to be very chashev, and it gives a list of 7 things that are considered to be beyond unique, in that people will never actually weigh those things or sell them except by looking at each piece as being valuable. And that is the shita that Rabbi Meir expands on, and he says, no, it's not only those very special and expensive things like Rimone Badan. You remember all those 7 things that we list? So Rabbi Meir says that, now here's the question. There's 2 quotes of how Rabbi Meir understands the expansion beyond those 7 things. And that is, anything, says Rabbi Meir, but there's a question how he quotes. Is it kol shedarko limnot or et shedarko limnot? If what Rabbi Meir said was anything which is sometimes sold by the unique piece, that's enough to make it chashev enough that it should not be but in something else. Too much chashev because it is actually something that is sometimes sold by the piece. So then everything's fine. If that's all it takes is something that sometimes is sold, so, okay, there are certainly times when people buy pieces by the piece. For instance, if you're planning on having something catered and you made a party, so then you could actually pay per portion. You know, then you don't start measuring the particular portion and so on. It's just portions cost X amount. So that would mean it's included in Rabbi Meir's din of something which is anything shedarko limanot. But if he said et shedarko limanot, then that is, remember the word et, which we don't really have an English equivalent to at all. There's no translation of the word et in English. So we don't have an equivalent preposition. But in Lashon HaKodesh, the nature of the word et is a preposition that is very tightly connected to what it is that it's connected to. You can leave out the et and still have the preposition of connecting to something. So you can say le'echol halechem. But when you say le'echol et halechem, then that means that it's very specific. So if Rabbi Meir says that it's talking about something which is et shedaka, then it means it's only sold by each piece. Well, then it doesn't make sense, because why would this be included in something that is always sold by piece? It's just a piece of meat. So Ela Lamandi Omar et shedarka limanot shanino, and that's the lashon of Rabbi Meir. How do you explain the fact that we don't say acharei rabim la'atot, and that would allow us to eat the other pieces? Answers the Gemara, this is different. Because if you're talking about a piece of meat that is being actually ordered by portion, so what are you serving it at a wedding or something? So then that means by definition, we have a new idea, which please should be written down, and that is chaticha haru'uya lehitchabet. This is something which is choshev because of the fact that you are mechabed people with it, which means that this particular piece has something that calls attention to itself as being beyond just a piece. It's a piece that you are presenting as choshev in itself. Well, that's the whole point of bittul. Bittul means it loses its status of being special. That's what it means to be mevatel. But if the whole point of this piece is, in fact, to draw attention to itself as being particularly valuable, then the kibud of it prevents it from being batel. Now, this is not a definition of what kind of piece. It's a definition of the reality that it is calling attention to itself because of the kibbut. Let's imagine a situation where there's the same piece, but you can't use it to call for kovet, as Tosfos gives a case. What if we're talking about pieces of meat that are given to the Kohanim as their part of, let's say, eating a korban chatas, right? You cannot have a chaticha really skabet for kachim. Because since the Torah insists on giving all the Kohanim a share, so there's nothing to be mechabed. It's not up to anybody to be mechabed. So there, by definition, it's not lizchabed. So even though it may be the same type of piece that if it were actually yours to be mechabed people with, it would be, in fact, never batel. But it's the actuality that calls attention to itself that you are being mechabed. That's when it matters, you see? So it's the actual fact of the kibbutz that prevents it from being butter. And therefore, shayni chaticha, ho'il v'ruya lehitchabed lifnei ha'orchim. So this is two different cases that we just had where there's a reason to ignore the fact that this is a bittul berov, maybe even 2-1. We've got two regular gidim and we've got one gid anasha. That is not batel because why? Because of the din of birya. And if we've got a piece that is ru'uya l'iskabed, that is not batel even though it's 2-1, because it is ru'uya l'hitkabed, and that kovet prevents it from simply disappearing as something generic into a bunch of other stuff. And we need both of these cases in the Mishnah. Because if the Mishnah had only told us the case of the Gid HaNasha and would have said we don't go according to the Rov, I would have said, okay, it's as we explained. That's because it's a Birya, and a Birya of Filu Be'elef Lobatil, which Gavi is writing down in his list, a Filu Be'elef Lobatil. It's a Birya. But maybe Chaticha, just because it's really Kabed, is not a reason not to be Batil. But Yashmina Chaticha, I would have said, maybe on the contrary. Maybe the thing is that it's not the definition of the piece. It's the definition of the fact that it is being presented with kavod, which is a completely different thing. So maybe that's the only time that we would say that something is in batel, because Hoel Veruku Yali Itkabed Balifnei Orchim. But just because something is a birya, I don't know. Maybe that would actually not be something that isn't batel, because that you could be mevatel into into something else because you're certainly not feeding it as a covert from the guests. So there's two totally different mechanisms over here. One is focusing on the type of material. That's not chaticha ruya leitchabet. That's the type of material which either is or is not a birya, as defined with the three cases that we just brought from the Shulchan Aruch that are absolutely required in order to call it a birya. And we need to remember those three very important things, as we said before, that it has to be something that is whole. It has to be something that is actually not just shalem, but it also has to be living. It has to be an organism. And it has to be also something that was initially, as it formed, that was the issue that the Torah gave it. And not it's an incidental extra, which is now being superimposed on something like, let's say, a nevela. The Torah have never said an organism that's a nevela. This is the organism. It wasn't formed as a nevela, and therefore it's not considered to be a birya. So we've got all of those things need to be fit in. I hope Gavi will take out his magic wand, make sure that all of the details are put in there.
Rebbe was saying two things. That was in terms of type, and what was the other thing?
Oh, sorry. So one is in terms of type, and one is in terms of what you're doing with it. And that is a totally different thing, which is you are using it to call attention to itself as covet. And therefore, if it's supposed to stand out, how can it be batal? So if it's generic, I understand it could be bavato it, but if you're using it, the whole idea of batal is that it's just another piece. But if you're trying to show this as a specific thing that is mechubad and stands out as, wow, look at this marvelous portion, so then obviously it's what it is that you're treating it as, and that makes it non-buttleable, which, as I pointed out before, that's exactly what Tosfos says. Even if it's the same piece of meat, but you can't use it in that way because it's kodesh, and it was given to all of the Kohanim in the same way, it can't be called a chaticha ruya lishabed because you're not using it in that way. It's not up to you to use. Dorash Rabba Bar Bar Chana. Now, suppose we talked about the case in the Mishnah where we have a chaticha shel nevela, or we had a chaticha shel dak tameh. So Rabba Bar Bar Chana said, look, in that event, if you actually do know, we talked about a case where you couldn't actually identify the case, right? But now, if you found that a piece of nevela or a piece of dark tame was cooked, and you took it out, you know which one it was, not the case that's in the Mishnah. So the din is, okay, how are you going to analyze the taste? So what Rabbi Bar Bar Chana says is, well, remember, as we said before, the taste has to be batal b'shishim in the whole thing. Eina oseret ad shetiten tam berotav, b'kipah, b'chatichot. It means that you see, was there enough of it to still give it tam, which of course is that shear of shishim, in the entire thing, which would include the sauce and the gravy and the soup and the actual other pieces that are in this mixture. And then if we've got the 60-1, so then it would be batal. Rav was very upset about that psak because he immediately got up. He called an amora to make sure that this was announced instantly and everybody would hear it. That's like we say, called an amora. It means like he brought a big loudspeaker and he immediately called attention to his argument on this psak. And this introduces an amazing idea which changes everything that we know about the Inyanim of Taharovis. And this is called, and the way to remember it is, you know, Chanan. Well, Chanan stands for Chaticha Naaset Nevela. That's the way in which we shorthand it, Chanan. So what is it that Rav wanted to make clear? Said Rav, the moment that you have something, Kivan Shenatan Ta'am B'Chaticha, Chaticha Atzma Naaset Nevela, Yoseret Kol Atichot Kulan, Mipnei Shehen Mina. Now, something very weird about this point. What Rav seems to be saying is that anything that tastes like the same thing that fell in, if that taste went into a different piece and it wasn't bottle, then that piece becomes a nevela. So before we get into this, because it makes no sense on the surface, let me tell you about it so that it would start making sense up front. So let's imagine a case like this. If we're talking about a piece of nevela that falls into a mixture of things, so that it's basically sticking its one piece among whatever, 10 pieces, and those pieces are all embedded inside of this delicious soup and this gravy and this whole thing. Okay. But there's a piece that doesn't have any part of itself sticking into the sauce. Which often happens. You got a lot of roast. You have a big roast. You put in a certain amount of gravy, water in that roast. You've got a few pieces that are on top and they're not under the water. The rest of it has at least part of them. Each piece is part of under the water. But let's say there's two pieces that are on top and they're not sticking into the water. Now, imagine what this means. What it means is that there's no medium that's taking out the tom and spreading them throughout the entire mixture, right? Afterwards, you come along and you take a spoon and you mix the whole thing up. Then you can say that the taste in one of the pieces is diffused throughout the entire mixture. But before you brought the spoon in, you had a piece that turned out to be a nevela that was not stuck into the gravy. And there was another piece that it was right on top of, which was also not in the gravy. Now, what happens now is a disaster, because the tom that went into that piece that was right next to the other piece did not spread through the entire pot. It only spread from one piece into the next piece. Now, suppose you come along, and now you take a spoon and you mix the whole thing up. Oh, boy, did you just make a mess. Because if all of this was under the water at the same time, so then we would look to see whether we had 60 times against it. But when there was no medium, and instead you only had one piece on top of another piece, that other piece absorbed the entirety of the taste without its being able to go through into the soup and the gravy. It's all in that piece. So the simplest way would be in a case where you had a piece of nevela with one other piece. You cook up that, and then this other piece is full of the taste of nevela, and now you come along and you bring in another 20 pieces and a bunch of soup and so on. But originally, you had started off with just one other piece. That's exactly the same thing as having these two pieces on top of the gravy and not having a medium that's going through them. Now what happens is, says Rav, is that the piece that was actually against the original piece of nevela and the taste was not distributed through the entire mixture, that piece is going to become itself a nevela. That piece is called chaticha naaseit nevela, otherwise known as chet nun nun, in which you can easily refer to him as chanan itself. Chaticha naaseit nevela. Okay, the problem is that what Rav just said makes absolutely zero sense. Because he said at the end of his statement, Chaticha atzman aseit nevela, yoseret kola chatichot, and these next words are disastrous. Yoseret kola chatichot kulam bipnei shehem minah. All of them are usher because min bimino is not boto. But that's ridiculous. If min bimino is not boto, so what's the difference of that extra piece? Even if it was one piece, min bimino is not bato. Why does it say since first it gave its taste into that piece, the second piece became usher because it was mino. The whole darn thing was usher because it was mino, because min bimino is in bato. And if you don't hold like Rabbi Yehuda, so then why did he say kulam usher ibn shu mino? It's ridiculous. So ask the Gemara, what in the world is that supposed to mean? Amalei Rav Safla Abaye, what Rav just said is silly. I mean, he was clearly only going like Rabbi Yehuda, because he says, b'pnei she'ein minah, right? So the piece, that piece that was the up-close piece, so that's not the first piece that came in contact with the Isser. And he says it's going to answer everything else because it's Mina. So that's what Reb Yehuda says, because it's Mina. So what's the difference? How much Mina? That's ridiculous. If you have any amount of Mina, according to Reb Yehuda, Min b'Mina is in Pato. So what's the difference if you had the first piece, which answered everything else, because Min b'Mina is never Pato, or if you got double the amount and it's Mina in Pato? Why do I have to come onto this whole crazy thing called Chaticha Nasit Nevela if as soon as you have anything which is Min b'Mina, it's not Pato? What is Rav talking about? Michte, Rav Kaman Amar L'Shabbat. You could tell me according to which sheet the Rav was going. He was going according to Reb Yehuda. He said so. He said, B'pnei Shehu Mina. That Shita is only going according to Reb Yehuda, who holds Min B'Mino is not Pata. So then why did Rav talk about this crazy case where it gave the Tom first into the piece that was adjacent, and therefore that became Chaticha Nevela? What's the difference? Even if that never happened, was the first piece a Nevela? Was it Min B'Mina? So Min B'Mina is not Pata without adding anything else. Why do I need Chaticha Nasis Nevela? What he's saying makes no sense. So Afilu Kilona Tam Nami, I don't need the first piece to be collecting Tam because it was up close. Min B'Mina is in Pata, period. Thank you very much. What is the meaning of adding another piece, which is Mino? Everybody understand clearly the question? These are central issues. You've got to get it straight now. The idea of Chaticha Nasit Nevela is clear. If something absorbs the taste on its own and the taste doesn't just go through it into a mixture, then that piece is messed up to become the equivalent of the original Isser. And therefore, it itself is a piece of Nevela. And we'll learn much more about this, but right now, this is the simplest take on the issue. And this is a major nekuda. Chaticha Nasit Nevela. Now, this is a tremendous chiddush because, look, let me point out to you, and there is, in fact, the sheet of Rabbeinu Ephraim that holds that that's the only real case. Chaticha Nasit Nevela, we understand, if you're talking about Basar V'Cholav, you had a piece of meat that was complete heter. You had a piece of milk, a glass of milk that was complete heter. You mix the two together. Which part is the Isser? The whole darn thing is usher, right? Once it's a mixture, every last bit is a new thing, which is the equivalent of a nevela. The Torah says you can't eat nevela. The Torah says you can't eat basar b'cholav. I don't care about the fact that it only turned into basar b'cholav afterwards. It's not as if it absorbed the taste of milk. It's that it is now a mixture of milk and meat. You're not going to tell me, well, okay, so now it absorbed that amount of milk. Let's add more meat and be mevatel that milk or whatever. No. Obviously, whatever was absorbed is a chaticha of nevela. If you're going to add more now, you're going to need the 60, which is the taste, connected the whole mess that was there originally. That's for sure. So that is clear to us that that's chaticha nasit nevela without any question. What Rav is adding over here seems to be that any iser is called Chaticha Nasit Nevela, which means, this is another important nekuda to remember because it's going to show up to you.
And it's not bottle?
It'll never, ever be bottle. But what that means is that you cannot add more pieces and spread the tom throughout the whole thing. Once it became an Nevela, and now you're adding another 1,000 pieces and you're rolling it all up, won't make any difference. But why won't it make any difference? There's another underlying concept over here, and that is Efsher Lesochato Asur. If you can squeeze out the Isser, it won't help you. That's part of what needs to be understood in order for something to be a Chaticha Nasit Nevela. Because if you can get rid of a tam after it's already been absorbed, then there's no meaning to Chaticha Nasit Nevela. I'll simply squeeze the Isser out by adding more pieces and allowing it to disperse between everything. And then for all intents and purposes, you squeezed out the taste by distributing the taste among all these other pieces, right? So in order for you to hold Chaticha Nasit Nevela, you have to hold Efshar Lesochato Asur. Now, all of these concepts are going to come.
Is that a physical impossibility? asur, meaning it can't be looked at that way.
Right. It means it won't make any difference to halacha. All of these things are in within the world of halacha. So there's no such thing as squeezing it out once it became part of the legacy of this piece. Okay, so as I say, that question and whether we would hold this by all Isurim is a big machlokas rishonim. And the pashtus of this Gemara is obviously that Rav's chiddush is that efshar lesochato is osur, and that we're saying chaticha nanases nevela even on an isur nevela, literal, and not on an isur of basar v'cholav, which is a given, and that therefore anything which is osur, that never had a chance to spread throughout the whole thing, is going to be irrecoverable. Once it has a din of nevela, it stays that way. You can't change it by changing the later proportions. And therefore, you need to be sure, says Rav, if you're telling me that you're going to look at the entire mixture, which is what you just said, you said that, didn't you just say that, that if it has enough to be keneged, bottle to be in the soup and in the rotev and in the kippah, well, I want people to understand that that's not necessarily true. Because if it was right up against the piece and it didn't have an opportunity to go through the rotev and the kippah, that then it's going to be another piece of min b'minai. So now the question is, what's the difference? Since there's even min b'mino, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is not bottle even in 1,000, what's the difference if you have another one piece or another 10 pieces, whatever? The first piece was already enough to aser, no matter how many pieces were in there. So what's Rav's point? Who cares if you've got another piece, which is a nevela? The first piece of nevela was enough to aser everything. So therefore, my Iriki Natan Tam, why did he talk about this extra piece that was now going to be absorbing all of the flavor into its one? Who cares about that piece? Afilu kilo Natan Nami. It's still exactly the same. I don't understand what the point is of adding this new thing of chaticha na'aseh nevela. Omar Le, so Abaya explained, wait, you're missing the point, says Abaya to Rav Safra. What we're talking about over here is that first, let's imagine the simplest case of the chaticha na'aseh nevela that Rav is talking about. There were two pieces in a pot, just two pieces. And nowhere was there anything else to absorb in it, right? It was just one other piece. And now you added a bunch of new stuff into that pot. But before you added the new stuff, you took out the original nevela. And you took out all of the liquid that was in the pot. Now you're left with that one piece that was up next to the other piece, correct? Now, in terms of the din, and it's important to understand this point too, in terms of the din of min b'mino lo batel, min b'mino lo batel, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is only true if this is the original thing that was awesome. So the fact that the second piece contained the taste of the first piece is irrelevant, because Rabbi Yehuda never said the taste of the same thing in a different piece is not batel. That's not true. It's only the original taste that's not batel. So if it wouldn't be for the fact that the second piece itself became its own nevela, then I wouldn't be able to say, well, what's the difference? Even if you took out all of the original stuff, you took out all the gravy, you took out all of that first piece, and now all that's left in the pot is that second piece, would you say, if you would not hold chaticha na'aseh nevela, would you say that that asered everything now that you put in the new mixture? No, because the taste of the first piece that's in the second piece is not called min b'minoi to aser all the other pieces. But once the second piece becomes a nevela, and it is min b'minoi of the other pieces, then it's asering them not because of the taste in it, but because the taste in it transformed it into a nevela. That's what Rav is saying. So even if you took everything out of the pot and all that you have now is that second piece now mixes in a second mixture, it's going to Asr as if it's min b'minay and it's not batel. That's why it's important. Okay, everybody hear this clearly? I'm going to go over it again tomorrow because this is so important. These are the main issues of the entire inyan of the Tarovas that we're bringing up here. Rava says, you don't have to come on to that case, Abaye. Afilu tema lo kadam v'silko. Now here, again, and I'm going to end with this because it's too much new things to handle in one sitting. There's another issue here. Think about what's going on. We've got a mixture of pieces that are not nevela with a piece of nevela. Let's talk about with a single piece of nevela. The piece of nevela is min b'minay, and it asers all of the other pieces, right? But suppose there is also gravy. Now, the gravy is not min b'minay because gravy is not meat. And there's spices and flavors and water, all things that are not min b'minay. What happens now? So this is a very important klal. And here's the klal. And Gavi better get ready to write the whole thing down, but everybody else has got to put it on your crushed trees. And that is, a min b'mino v'davar acher. If you have both min b'mino, which is the different chatichot, but you also have something else, which is the soup, the gravy, the spices, the water, and so on. What's the din? The din is delete the min b'mina. Take it out of the picture. First decide, do you have enough shelo b'mina to be mevatel the tam? If you do, then you don't have to worry about the mina. So salek, this is the rest of the quote, Salek et mino kamisha eno, take out from the equation the min b'mino. Instead, first look at whether you can be mavato the min b'mino in the min b'she'eno mino. If the min b'she'eno mino is enough to be mavato it, then the she'eno mino is rabba alavu mavatlo. So now think about the difference. If I only had one piece, so now when I'm measuring, says Rav, and that's why I am insisting, says Rav, that you have to be sensitive to this issue. Because if one of the pieces was sticking outside of the soup, you're going to have a problem. Because, let's say initially, you have enough soup, you've got enough gravy, you've got enough spices, that there is 60-1 to be mevatel min, this is min b'she'eno mina. But now, you've got double the amount. Because you thought you only had one piece, but I'm telling you, you have two pieces. Do you have enough gravy to be mevatel two pieces? No, maybe. I'm saying, I don't know. I'm not telling you no. I'm just telling you, you may be up the creek without a paddle because you thought, you I've had enough here to be mevatel the piece of nevela. Yeah, you do, but not anymore. Because now since the original piece was sticking out of the sauce and it only absorbed the piece from the original nevela, you've got two pieces of nevela. Do you have 60 times two pieces of nevela? No. So then you can't say she'eno mina rabba lavu mevatlo. So does it make a major difference whether we say that chaticha nasis nevela? Darn right it does. It changes the entire proportion. You now have to have double the amount that you had before. That's why I'm telling you. But you don't have to come on to a case where I started all over again and I just took out this piece and second piece and made another mixture. Even if it was in the same mixture, it would still make a major difference because of this klal. That wherever you have min, b'mino, v'dover, acher, salek et mino k'misheino. First out, take out the min, b'mino. Just look whether you have enough min, b'sheino, mino. And then if eno mino is rabba alav, it'll be batol. Brilliant.
Rabbi, is that literal? You must take it out, or we
no.
say we look at it?
No, you look at it. Meaning it's not, as if it's not there. It's not in the equation any longer.
We're going to review it here because these are basically the most fundamental ideas that we've done in the past four pages, most fundamental ideas of Hilchot Ta'arovet, which are among the most Chumash Shas. So I want to go over with you the additional things that we learned last night. And that was, we introduced this concept, a number of concepts that were simple enough. One was the definition of Birya. We went through the actual Shulchan Aruch inside, and we read the three requirements of the Shulchan Aruch for calling something a Birya, that it's not so simple. It's just anything that is like, you know, one thing is considered to be a Birya. A Birya is very specific. It has to be something that is created as Isser, not something that became Usser. So let's say you had, Torah says that an Oof Tahor that becomes an Avela, so it's Betame and so on, but it's also Usser. So you say, oh, that's a great example of a Birya, but it's not, because when it was patched, it was certainly not Usser. And if it's not something that's Usser from the start, that's the first important thing. That's not a Birya. Furthermore, it has to have been alive. Something alive, when we mean it has to be animal life. It's not a plant. It has to be an actual animal life. And therefore, if it was something that was Usser because it's Orla, or Kloya Kerem, and it's a whole grape, or it's a whole wheat, that's not called a Birya. It doesn't have the chashivas of the Birya. And the third thing was that it has to be something that is whole and was whole. And we were talking about chelev. Chelev can't be a Birya. It's like different pieces and parts. So that's very important. As you said, I'm hoping that Gavi, even though he's hiding behind that pretty G, is nonetheless here. He is here. There we go. That means we can be confident that we've got all of this written down. So that was the first thing that we learned yesterday, and that was Birya. Second thing that we learned yesterday was the concept of Chaticha HaRu'iya LeHitchabed B'fnei HaOrchim, and that is generally just cut down to Chaticha HaRu'iya LeHitchabed. And that is something which is a item that you use to make an impact. And therefore, since you're using it to make an impact, it has a chashivut, which the whole idea of is that it's not going to just disappear in a bunch of generic similar pieces. The whole idea is its chashivas. And therefore, bitul would not apply, and there too, afilu be'elef lo batel, just like a birya. It's never going to become bottom. Then we have a machloket, and there are two girsaot over here, and Gavi has put both of them in, either in brackets kol or slash et. So either kol shedarko limanot or et shedarko limanot, which is Rabbi Meir Shita, that anything either which is ever sold by peace, and that could be maybe a portion, might be sold by piece if you're ordering a chasana meal, so then you would pay pieces. Then that would be sometimes sold by piece. That's called kol shedarko limanot. Et shedarko limanot are things that are only sold by pieces. And then that's Rabbi Meir Shita, and we had there an even more limited shita, which lists seven specific items that are considered to be chashuv enough not to be bought. So that's not our sugya here. That's sugya that we had in various places, which also, when we get to again, we'll review in terms of our special Tarovitz dinim. Then we had the underlying, most chashuv issue that we spoke about last night was the idea of chanan. Chanan stands for chaticha na'aseit nevela. So this was the shita that Rav introduced, which is that when something is the sole recipient of the Isser, and there's not enough there to be mevatel the Isser, that piece itself, henceforth, is considered to be the equivalent of the original piece. This makes a tremendous difference. So, and it's also very common. The reason that it's very common is that even though the stripped down piece of Chaticha Nasis Nevela would be an unusual case where you boiled one piece of Nevela with another piece of Nevela. They were only these two pieces, and therefore the second piece of Nevela was usher, because obviously it wasn't 60 times as big as the other piece and was not Levata the Tam. Or it may be that you hold min bimino lo batil, like Reb Yehuda, and that created an iser in the second piece. So according to Rav, that second piece becomes the full equivalent of the first piece. And it itself is considered to be a prime nevela. Now, what difference does that make? Well, first of all, the difference that it makes is that in the event that something would only have the taste of an original piece, so let's say you have something that is min b'she'eino min, and it would be mevatel the piece if there were enough of it, but it gets some of the iser in it, and that iser is not but. Now, you take this second piece, and you mix it in another mixture. Does it aser as if the entire piece is aser, or does it aser only according to what the maximum amount is that it could have absorbed of iser? Right? So let's say we had an original piece, which is one kizai. And then we had another piece, which is 50 kizeis. Now, the amount of possible absorption in the second piece was only one kizai.
Even if it got in every single piece that was in the original, it would only have a maximum of one kizai, you see. And in that case, you wouldn't be able to osir it as if the entire piece was osir. But if something can become an avela because of the iser that's in it, then the entire piece becomes usr, which is a disaster. So then instead of having that original one kizayit, you now have this gigantic piece of 50 kizaisim, all of which is viewed as the equivalent of the original. So you can see where Chaticha Nasis Nevela would be extremely disruptive. So that would be the classical case. Now, the case in which it becomes much more common is not where you cooked it alone together with one thing and then transferred it to another location. The classical case would be where you're cooking a roast, and this roast you have cut up into, I don't know, 10 different pieces. Now, when you're cooking the roast, you don't put in your gravy, that is to say, the water and the spices and the oils and whatever it is that you were going to put in. You don't put in those things all the way to the top. You generally, when you're roasting, you've got like a couple inches on the bottom, let's say even 5 inches, okay, in a 10-inch tall pot. Now, some of the pieces that you put in, you allow to gradually stew, but at the beginning, they are above the water. They're above the gravy level. Now, suppose you have two pieces that are above the gravy level. That means that those two pieces are not circulating. There's not the medium. In this case, the medium is the mixture of the water and the spices and so on, the soup that's in it. You don't have a circulation of the medium. And if you don't have a circulation of the medium, then you have to look at, well, what's happening as if these two pieces were up against each other and they were cooking separately. Well, there, one of the pieces would become completely usher. And especially, and this is Rav's belief, that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, and that min b'mina is usr, and that therefore this piece is not merely usr because it has the taste of the other thing in it. It itself becomes a nevela. Now that's a major difference for a number of reasons. Number one, if something has only the taste of another thing in it, then it is not included in the overall rubric of Rabbi Yehuda's din of min b'mino lo batel. Min b'mino lo batel is only when it's the primary taste. Then we say that taste is not batel. But if it's not the primary taste, then it doesn't have the chumra of min b'mino. If you now make the new piece, the second piece, you call it a novella. And again, I remind you, that's called Chaticha Naaseit Novella, or as it's always abbreviated, Chanan. So if you hold Chaticha Naaseit Novella, the problem is that now it will aser min bemino as if it was a primary novella. Okay, so that's the first important difference. Now, the next important difference would be in a case where that piece was transferred, that second piece was transferred to another pot. And now we start a new roast. Then if you hold Chaticha Naaseit Novella, it is going to aser that second pot as if it was a primary novella. And the entire pot will have to have enough to be mevatel that. Now, there's another big difference, and that is how much iser is there, even if it would remain in the same pot. And why would that make a difference? If you hold that min bemino isn't batel anyway, it hardly matters how much min bemino is, because if min bemino is going to aser, even if it's a tiny, insignificant amount, so then who cares how much of it there is? I do. Why do I do? And this is the last piece that we had yesterday, which is a very important yesod that comes up in different ways, even if you don't actually hold min bemino lo batel. And that is the klal, that if you have both mino and eino mino, so this is called min vemino v'davar acher. So you have a mixture of min vemino with an additional item which is eino mino in it. The rule is delete the mino. So saleket mino kemisha eino. Put the equation up without the factor of mino in it. Why? Because first check to see. If eino mino rabba alavu mevatlo, if just the mixture of the min in the eino mino would be sufficient to be mevatel it, then you don't have to worry about the fact that min bemino isn't batel. You first are mevatel it, and then there's no mino left to aser, you see? So therefore, the difference would be if the second piece took on the same identity as the first piece, which is, again, called chaman, chaticha naaseit nevela, now you're going to need double, or whatever the amount was in the second piece, you're going to need that amount of eino mino to be mevatel it, you see? So suppose you had these pieces of novella had fallen into a pot which contained soup. Now, if there would have been 60 times the amount of soup in the novella, so then it would have been mevatel the tam of the novella. If you have two pieces in the novella, because the first novella was cooked together with the other piece outside of the mixture, now you're going to need double the amount of soup that you had before, because now the second piece has the same din as that first piece because it was up against it, and therefore you're going to have to get rid of both minos before you're able to be mevatel. So all of those are differences in whether you hold min bemino, whether you hold chaticha naaseit nevela or not. So that means over the past 2 days, what we've done is tam ke'iker. We did kol shedarko limanot or et shedarko limanot, which is the two girsaot and how to understand Rabbi Meir. We've talked about a birya, and we've talked about a chaticha ruya alehitcha beit. And we talked about chaticha naaseit nevela. And we talked about min v'mino v'davar acher, if eino mino is rabba lavu mevatel, you're saleik et mino. And we also, although the Gemara didn't mention it, we brought up the question of efshel esochato. Because efshel esochato means that if you can restore the original proportions in something, it can be washed out or literally squeezed out. So you would be able, by increasing the proportions of heter to the iser, to now squeeze out, because of the new proportions, the iser that was there. If you hold chaticha naaseit nevela, then efshel esochto is a joke. You can't hold efshel esochto, because if the entire thing becomes a nevela, what exactly are you squeezing out? You can't squeeze out itself. And therefore, Chaticha Nazis Nevela would be the exact opposite of the possibility of Efshela Sochato. So those are the sugyas that we raised yesterday. And now we can move on to secondary sugyas, which are not directly nogea, the din of Taroves, and they are nogea how it is that we understand the din of Yid HaNasha particularly. So we have now completed the part of Chulin that deals with Taroves, and we're moving back to purely Yid HaNasha issues. And we're going to be discussing a very important issue, which is whether Isser is Chal al Isser. So let's, before we start our Mishnah today, which is a continuation of yesterday's daf, let's recognize what the problem is. When the Torah assers something, the idea of Isser is a state. It's a state of Isser which prevents you from accessing it. Now, can there be such a thing as another state of Isser which would affect an existing state of Isser? Does that make sense? I mean, if in fact there is sort of a binary issue here, is something in a state of Isser or is it not? So what would be the point of adding another Isser? The second Isser wouldn't have any application. But if the second Isser doesn't have any application, then that would mean that even if you gave this person a hatra'ah for the second Isser and not for the first Isser, he wouldn't be chayev because that second Isser never had any place to establish itself. That's called Ein Isur Chal al Isur. Now, there are variations of the situation. Let's think about the variations. We could have two Isurim whose onset is simultaneous. If it's simultaneous, so that's called Bivat Achat. If it's simultaneous, Naftali, where are you, sweetheart? I mean, come on. We need our Naftali fixed for the morning, and we don't have him. I mean, we know he's not on a boat. We know that he's not in the game park. Or we think he's
coming, Rebbe.
Ah, okay. Not fast enough for me, but all right. We're looking forward. And that not only this, but you're affecting Akiva of all things. Even Akiva is not showing up. That's the wrong Akiva, see? Okay. And look at this, Shmuel Chanina chickened out before he got attacked. So he showed up too. Good. So now we've got something of a quorum. And we still have those dreams, you know, of having Yaakov Kleiman here one day. But, I mean, that's going to take a cultural revolution, for sure. Okay. And getting back to our thing. So let's imagine. We could have these two Isurin being Chal Bevat Achat. That's one possibility. So then how could one be any different than the other? How about if one of them is more chamur than the other one? How about if one of them was an Isser Lav, and now the new Isser that's about to be Chal is an Isser Karet? How about that? Whoa. Is that enough to make the new state of Isser Chal because of its implications? Can you knock out a current Isser and substitute a more chamur Isser for it? Okay, question. Now here come the more complex issues. And that is the idea of an Isser Kolel or an Isser Mosif. So if you've got something which until now was going to include a certain group of things in it, and now is suddenly a new Isser comes along, which besides including the first thing, include lots of other things that were previously kosher. Now, all of a sudden, they become usher. What about then? So over there, you are including new things in what was originally mutter. So now, if that new isser is chal on a bunch of other things that previously were mutter, then that means that it's including, it's kolel, it is broadening the klal, so to speak. So it is kolel, new things that previously were actually okay. Well, I mean, on those things, of course, the Isser is Chal, isn't it? I mean, you can't ignore the Isser on these new things. So if you had something that was Usser before, let's say Gid HaNasha, the rest of the animal was perfectly okay. Now that animal dies, it becomes a Nevela. Well, now every part of that animal is usher, right? Well, I mean, we can't ignore that. The rest of the animal is certainly going to be usher for Nevela. So do we say that since this isser definitely had a place to be chal in the whole rest of the animal? Well, once it's chal on the rest of the animal, you can't ignore its presence on this part of the animal, can you? So that would mean that it would be perhaps, and that is called migo. It basically is a migo since it was chal on one piece or on another 100 parts of the animal, it would have to also be chal on this piece because the only problem of anus or chal al iser is that it doesn't have a place to be chal. If the state of iser is already saturated what was saturated, so then, okay, what's the point of adding? But if it isn't saturated in the sense that there are other parts where it's going to be chal, then certainly it would actually be chal on this piece as well. And then we also have a concept of mosif. Now we're going to see that that is a complex sugya. We're going to talk about it at the end of the daf, in which we have the things that were originally, or people that were originally not included are now included. The issa remains the same, but were mosif new things to be included in this iser. So we'll talk about this in Benogia, Yom Kippur, and Shabbos, and so on, when we get to it. So let's talk about our Mishnah and understand how this gets into the Mishnah. Noheg b'tohura ve'enu noheg b'tmeyam. The din of a gidal nasha is only true about kosher animals, not about non-kosher animals. So what exactly does that mean? Well, it's not clear. That could mean that if you eat the gidal nasha of a non-kosher animal, you're only chayev for eating a non-kosher animal, but not on the gidal nasha. But of course, that would depend on whether yesh begidim benotein tam. Because if ein begidin benotein tam, then that means that when you're eating a gidal nasha, you're chewing on a piece of wood. So if the Torah asserts on the gidal nasha, even if it is a piece of wood, and even if ein begidin benotein tam, the way the Gemara put it before is, well, eitzu, it's true, it's a piece of wood, but ha-Torah asarta, the Torah said this is a piece of wood that you can't eat, so what's your problem? But if it is a piece of wood and it did not apply to the Behemah Temeya, then chewing on a piece of wood that is called Behemah Temeya is not usser. Chewing on a gidal nasha would be like chewing on a pigskin wallet. Is there an isser of chewing a pigskin wallet? No. Well, then there's no isser of chewing on a gidal nasha either. That would be the possible implications, depending on whether you hold yesh begidim benotein tam or not. So, according to the Tanna Kamma, either it means you're only going to be over on one Isser and not two Isserim, or it means you're not going to be over on any Isser, because it's not Noeg B'Tmeo. We'll discuss that possibility in the Gemara, depending on whether we hold of Yesh B'Gidim and Otin Tam. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it does apply to even things that are not kosher. Now, again, what does that mean? Does it mean that you're chayav of two things? One for the non-kosher animal and one for the gidal nasha of the non-kosher animal, and then what do you do about anus or chal al iser? Or does it mean you're chayev only on one thing? Which one thing? Well, maybe it ain't the gidim in osein tam, and then you'd only be chayev for chewing on the gidal nasha because the Torah didn't aser the pigskin wallet, but it did aser the gidal nasha wallet. That's the point. So we'll see this in the Gemara. And Rabbi Yehuda says, well, obviously it has to apply to non-kosher animals, because Halom Ibnei Yaakov Nesar Gidal Nasha. Look, the Gidal Nasha applied all the way back then when the children of Yaakov Avinu were actually not even Jewish. They were just Bnei Noach, right? And nonetheless, it says right there, after the Malach causes this damage to Yaakov Avinu's Kaf HaYarech, the Bnei Yisrael don't eat the Gidal Nasha, even though they don't have a din of Jews yet. So at that point, would we have made a difference between a kosher animal or an unkosher animal? They were able to eat any kind of animal. And therefore, if they didn't eat the Gidal Nasha, it must have meant they didn't eat the Gidal Nasha, not of a kosher animal and not of a non-kosher animal. So when exactly did that change? if originally the Giddanasha was clearly applicable to any animal at all, which was any animal that the Bnei Yaakov would be able to eat, when would it suddenly become usur only on kosher animals? Therefore, it makes no sense, as Rabbi Yehuda, to claim that the Giddanasha is only applicable to kosher animals, because Adayin Behemot Tameiah Mutaret Lahem. And the answer that the Tanagama gives to Rabbi Yehuda is, no, that's not true. The Gid Hanasha only was asered at Har Sinai. But since the Torah is giving the reason for the Gid Hanasha, so what does it say? Al-Kain lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael et Gid Hanasha. It's because of this. Because of what? Because of this. What's this? The story. So then you have to put the story up against the Gid Hanasha. And because of that, it was written to explain why it is that we don't eat the Giddanasha, but it is not the makor of the time at which the Giddanasha is chal. It's an ex post facto notation of the Torah about when it is that the Giddanasha took place, which explains the strange fact that there's this issur of Giddanasha. And it does more than that, obviously. It relates the Giddanasha, and it relates Bnei Yisrael, as we saw earlier in the perek, of the davar that was shalach b'Yaakov, which was nafal b'Bnei Yisrael. And it completely changes our sense of the relationship that we have to the avos and to the actual physical presence of Yaakov Avinu. So it had to be written there, but that doesn't mean that it applied there, does it? So this is how we answer Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the question is, says the Gemara, what exactly did Rabbi Yehuda mean when he says that you cannot eat the Giddanasha of a Tameah? Did he mean that you'd be over on two separate Isurim? Well, before we tackle that, let's tackle Dr. Barry.
Just had a question. If the prohibition against the Giddanasha didn't take place until Har Sinai, how do we understand the story of Yosef when he took out the Giddanasha in front of the brothers when they came for the meal?
Excellent question. And we're actually going to be getting to talk about Yosef later on. So let's wait till we get there and we handle it. Okay, fantastic. Man, oh man. Now he's cooked, because after asking a question like that, there's no way that he could simply disappear, because everybody's looking at him. They're going to know at any moment. Houdini, you have messed yourself up today. You became a chaticha haruya lehitchabed. And since a chaticha haruya lehitchabed cannot be bottle, there's no way for you to disappear. Ha ha! The sugya has defeated you. Now, the question is, does he take that as a challenge? Well, we'll see. Okay, lovely. All right, so the question is, if we take for granted that according to Rabbi Yehuda, that is, he's saying that there is a din of Gid Hanasha, and it's even on a Behemah Tameah. It sounds like he holds that you would be chayiv both for Gid Hanasha and for the Behemah Tameah. But that would imply that Rabbi Yehuda holds Isur Chal al Isur. So here's our first problem. Does indeed Rabbi Yehuda hold Isur Chal al Isur? Because we seem to have a strong raya that he does not, because Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the following limud. You might think, says the Braisa, we know that the Torah gave us a din of Nivlat Of Tahor. So that's a very unique din. We love that din. It was like so upfront in the dinim that we were learning when we were learning Masechet Tyrus, and the question of the unique situation of a Nivlas of Tahor and its implications. Anyway, you might think that a non-kosher bird would also be metame you when you swallow it, just like a Nivlat of Tahor is metame b'beit tabliya. Well, says Rabbi Yehuda, you should not make that mistake. Because if you take a look at the Isser of the Nevela, what it says over there is Nevela v'trefa lo yochal litam'ava. Don't eat that Nevela v'trefa, and which would then be metameyu. So that means, what type of thing is going to be metameyu? Only if it's lo yochal. So if there's the Isser of Achila, meaning that the Isser is Bal Tochal Nevela, so then it will be Metame you. But if it's Usser anyway, not because it's a Nevela V'Trefa, but because it's a non-kosher bird, then it's not included in the pasuk of Lo Yochal L'Tamaba. Yatsa ze she'en Yisro Mishum Bal Tochal Nevela. So therefore, if you're eating this owl, and it's not going to be usher because it's an avela, it's usher because it's a non-kosher bird, then it is not included in Latamaba. It's isser is mishum bal tochal nevela. Now, wait a minute. Bal tochal tmea. Now, if Rabbi Yehuda would hold isser chal al isser, that would mean that a dead owl is also a nevela. It's not just a tmea. So why would Rabbi Yehuda say, this is not included Bishum Bal Tochal Nevela? It is included in Bal Tochal Nevela. So apparently, Rabbi Yehuda holds that once it's an owl, it can't be a dead owl also, because an owl is anyway also, so what's the difference if it's alive or dead? Therefore, he clearly holds Ein Isser Chalal Isser, because there's no mokum for that Isser to be Chal. You know, Tsuri, people who are learning the Daf Yomi are basically beyond milk formula. It's time to grow up. We're doing chulin here, baby. And I mean, we've got roasts and we've got chickens and we've got like all kinds of amazing stuff over here. And you're just going to get sick to your stomach drinking all of that milk. I would suggest starting a new diet. What do you say? Tsuri is not impressed.
What is Rebbe drinking?
Ah, good point.
He'll have some gold from Rebbe. He says it's for him.
Biltong and milk?
After.
Of course. Is the milk first or the biltong first? Okay. So we see clearly that Rebbe Yehuda does not hold that Isser is Chalal Isser. So why does Rabbi Yehuda say that you would be chayev on the Gid Anasha of a non-kosher animal? V'chi tema, maybe you'll try to tell me. Well, actually, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold that you'd be chayev both. Rabbi Yehuda holds that you're not chayev mishum behema tmeya. Why? Because if you say ein begidin benotein tam, so then that's like chewing a pigskin wallet, and there's no Isser. But if, on the other hand, the Torah said that this particular piece of pigskin called a Gid HaNasha is Usser, so then if you chewed on a pigskin wallet that was made out of the Gid HaNasha of a pig, then it would be Usser, because that would be considered to be an Eitzu, but the Torah Assered it anyway. So if that would be the case, then that would explain it. So maybe Rabbi Yehuda holds Ein Begidim Menotein Tam, and there is no Isser of Behemah Tmeya. There is only an Isser of Gid HaNasha. Therefore, it has nothing to do with Isser Chalal Isser. The only part of this animal that would be Usser in terms of only Gid HaNasha is because the Torah Assered the Gid HaNasha, even though it's a piece of wood. So then it's not Usser as a pigskin wallet. Problem is, I mean, that would be a very nice explanation, except it can't be true. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda does not hold that. Rabbi Yehuda holds Yesh Begidim Benotein Tam, as I can show you very clearly. V'sova Rabbi Yehuda Ein Begidim Benotein Tam. Well, what about the Braita that says, this is Rabbi Yehuda, if you eat the Gid HaNasha of a Behemah Tmeya, guess what? Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayev two separate lavim. Oh my God. Well, that's a big problem, because then obviously he holds that when you eat a Gid HaNasha, you're eating a piece of meat. And he holds, again, Isser Chalal Isser. Oh gosh, I thought he held Ein Isser Chalal Isser. So how could you be chayev both for the Gid HaNasha and for the Behemah Tmeya? Cough, man, we're really up the creek here. By the way, once we're bringing in Rabbi Yehuda Shita, who holds a Chayev two things, we might as well tell you Rabbi Shimon. and then we'll try to understand Rabbi Shimon later. But Rabbi Yehuda holds you're chayev two, and Rabbi Shimon holds you're not chayev anything, which is interesting. We're going to have to figure out why you're not chayev anything, not for the Gidan Nasha and not for the Behemah Tameah. So he potters you. Why? Okay, but we're back to our question. If Rabbi Yehuda holds ain is a chalal iser, how in the world could he hold that you'd be chayev two separate chiyuvim? Well, the truth is, you're right. Rabbi Yehuda holds that yesh begidim benosin tam. And the thing is that if Rabbi Yehuda holds that the gidan nosha is also chal on a shalil, so that if the fetus develops with a gidan nosha, so then we've got a bat achat. We've got two isurim that are developing hand in hand. We know this isn't true, right? Because we saw before with the din of the development of the nozer made and kezayit mina made. But we're going to ask that question in a moment. But let's assume that that's true. So if the fetus develops at the same moment that its pieces become usher because it is a non-kosher fetus, the gid hanasha is also developing, and it's called a gid hanasha of that fetus. And therefore, if you hold that the gid hanasha is usher even in a fetus, so then you've got a simple answer. Two isurim that take place at exactly the same moment, it's impossible to say ain isur chalal isur, because, I mean, which one are you going to say is chal? And therefore, the state of isur is achieved by both isurim simultaneously. That must be what Rabbi Yehuda holds. So because of that, it would be both a behemah tameah and a gid hanasha all at the same time. So iser gid v'iser tuma would be coming all at the same moment. But what? That's crazy. Rabbi Yehuda is the one that gid hanasha, he says gid hanasha is not noeg b'shlil. Darn it, we had that in a Mefarish Mishnah before. How are you playing games with me over here? V'atnan, this is the Mishnah we just had last week. It says in the Mishnah, the noeg b'shlil, and Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ain't no noeg b'shlil. What are you telling me, gid hanasha is noeg b'shlil if Rabbi Yehuda says it's not noeg b'shlil? We also said chal bo muta, but that's irrelevant to this. Yeah, says the Gemara. You're forgetting the whole sugya, for heaven's sakes. When Rabbi Yehuda said that then it's not noeg b'shlil, what was he talking about? He was talking about his machlokas with Rabbi Meir about matzapa ben tisha chai in a ben beku'a, remember? You shechted the mother, you find a live fetus that was shechted, and it was fully developed, 9 months development in a behemah gedola, and in a behemah that was a kitana, a sheep, it was 5 month fetus, full term, whatever full term is. So there we had a machlokas. Rabbi Meir holds that full term fetuses are not included. He managed it. You see this? He managed it. Darn, I don't know what to do about it. Yes, he's gone. Mamish magic. Anyway, a full-term fetus is not going to ever be mutter with the Shechita Sa'im, and therefore, obviously, it has its own Gid Hanasha. That's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says a full-term fetus is included in Babema. So if it's inside of the mother, it's kosher. Not because there's no din of a gid hanasha, but because everything in a fetus is simply considered to be mutter because of this new halacha of kol ba'behema tochelu, right? But I'm not talking about a kosher fetus. I'm talking about a non-kosher fetus. Is a non-kosher fetus kosher because its mother was shechted? What a joke. So obviously, if I hold that it's not going to be kosher to the mother, obviously I hold that it's noeg b'shlil. I was only arguing about whether the shechita of the aim took away the din of the gid hanasha, but there's no shechita same on a behema tameah that's going to take away the din of the gid hanasha. So what are you telling me? Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold noeg b'shlil. There's no such Rabbi Yehuda. He may say those words, but it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, because we're talking about a behema tameah. So therefore, the Gemara's kasha, how can you say that Rabbi Yehuda says, Bimotzi tamrit noeg b'shlil, if Rabbi Yehuda says, beferish, that it's ain't a noeg b'shlil? It's a ridiculous question. Hanimile Gabi Tahora, obviously, Einanoi Bashlil, was only a function of its being inside of a kosher animal. But that's because of the new halacha of Kol Babeima Tochelu. You can eat anything that's inside, including the Gid HaNasha. But Tameya, why would Rabbi Yehuda say there's no din of a Gid HaNasha in a Tameya? Of course, there's a Gid HaNasha. And therefore, we can say that it was all Bevat Achat, the same development that caused it to be called the tissue of a non-kosher animal, is what caused it to be called the Gid HaNasha of a non-kosher animal. So everything is clear, except for what's bothering the hand of Moshe Handel. And what is that now, troublemaker?
I'm sorry, but Kol Behema Tocheler doesn't include the Gid HaNasha of the mother, so why would it include the Gid HaNasha of the child?
This is an intolerable question. Because, and that's the whole thing before, that Kol Behema refers to the womb of the animal. It doesn't refer to the animal's own cut-off liver or cut-off tchol. That was exactly the whole opening of that circuit. What's with you? You need to do chazara. Okay. So anyway, the problem, however, is the circuit that we had earlier as well. It is not true that the gidim in an animal develop at the same time that the overall tissue develops. The original tissue of the animal does not harden into gidim until later on in its development, which means that these cells were originally usher as a behemah tmeah and only subsequently turned into a gid hanasha. And therefore, if you hold that ain iser chalal iser, you're up the creek again. Because how is it that, if it isn't bevat achat, how is it that it became usher? That's our question, and we'll remain with that question. Because I am going to show you that the physical reality is that the gidim do not develop along with the overall tissues. And how do I know that? I know that from the Mishnah in Nazir that we discussed earlier. Could you really think you're going to get away with trying to tell me that both Gid HaNasha and Tuma are simultaneous and therefore there's no problem of Ein Iser Chalal Iser? Well, what about the Mishnah in Nazir? What type of Tumot is a Nazir Migaleach? Remember, if a Nazir is exposed to Tumat Meit, then certain Tumot Meit, then he has to start his whole Naziris over again. He has to become Tor. He has to bring Karbonis of a Nazir because of his Tumah. And then he has to be Mona again and start his Naziris. What type of Tumah is, the Mishnah says, is a Nazir start over him? Well, Aleilu Tumot and Nazir Megaleach. So it lists various things, but it says on a mate or on a Kezayat min Amate. Now, that's a little ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, Vikashalan. Well, why bother mentioning on a whole mate if you already mentioned on a Kezayat min Amate? I mean, if ala Kezayat min Amate Megaleach, do I really need to know that ala mate kulo lo koshikain? I mean, what's the point of mentioning a whole mate if you're even a Kezayat? Oh, Rabbi Yochanan, that's the whole point. There are cases where you could have a whole mate that does not have a Kezayat of Basar on a whole body of a mate. You're kidding. I'm not kidding. I'm talking about a very early stage fetal development in which you do not have a Kezayat on the whole fetus, but you still have a formed human, which is enough to be mitamehim, even though it's not a Kezayat, which is fine. That's great. It's very interesting. But what does it have to do with us? What it has to do with us is the way that Rabbi Yochanan explains it. And the way that he defines that stage of fetal development puts the lie to what we just said. Because Amar Rabbi Yochanan, well, what it's talking about over here is a fetus that is so undeveloped that it doesn't have any gidim. Doesn't have any gidim. Well, so then obviously the basar of that mate, that fetus, is just basar, and it has not yet turned into gidim. And that's goofa why he phrased it this way, to let us know that it is not a simultaneous development. First, you have the development of these cells that are not yet hardened into gadol. And then as fetal development continues, that same buser indeed becomes a gid. But that means that the iser of tuma came first. So we're back to the question that we had before. If the iser of tuma min tameh came first, how did the iser of the gid come to be chal on it? That is the question. And I think even Trevor should not hide from these questions. It needs to be confronted face to face. And as long as the phone faces up to the ceiling, it's not actually looking at this face to face. But we'll give him another day to think it over. Anyway, so if we call an undeveloped fetus a, and it's just semantics, but the semantics meanwhile teach us something, right? A nefel shalonit kashu evarav beginim. So what do you see? You see that the iser tuma comes first. So now we're stuck again. Why is iser chal al iser if Rabbi Yehuda himself holds ein iser chal al iser, as we proved before? Oh, gosh. So now we're back where we started from. And answers the Gemara an answer that we already met at the beginning of the perek on the very first day, which was, why would Gidah Nosha be chal on Mugdoshim? So we said over there, Gidah Nosha is chamur. Why is it chamur? Because it's noyeg beven noyach, according to Rabbi Yehuda, right? So since its iser started before Kabbalah Satera, the way Rabbi Yehuda says it, so then this meets Rabbi Yehuda's criteria perfectly. Because Rabbi Yehuda is saying, well, I may hold ein iser chal al iser, but I would still hold that if one of those Isurim is uniquely Chamur, it pushes the state of Isur that exists because of something less meaningful, pushes it away and takes its place and creates a state of more Chamur Isur. And therefore, since I hold Shekeni Suro Noeg Bivnei Noach, so since it's also an Isur that went all the way back, according to me, all the way back to Bnei Yaakov at that point, when they still had a din of Bnei Noach, therefore this is an Isser Chamur, and it would be Chal even on an existing Isser of a Behema Temiyah. Therefore, I'd say, Gid is Chal on a Behema Temiyah. Daikanami, and if you read the Mishnah, you'll see. Keep your mind open, and you'll be medayik that this is exactly what Rabbi Yehuda was pointing out. Because when Rabbi Yehuda argued under Chachomim, he says to them, what's with you guys? Even though Adayin Behemat Me'ah Muteret Lahem, so obviously, Rabbi Yehuda feels the necessity of pointing this out as the mocker of his Shita, that you would be still over on a Gid Anosha, even though the Behemat Me'ah is currently Osir, we would still say that it retains that iser it had, and we would not view it as being a problem of ein iser chal al iser, even though now a behema tmeya is not muteret lahem. So that would mean that it's specifically because of the fact that it was chal even then, that means that it's going to continue to be chal now, despite the fact that now it's usher. So that means that Rabbi Yehuda is essentially saying to the Tanakama, look, I would agree with you, except for the fact that if the iser of Gidah Nosha was originally given and was never removed, so then that means that clearly the Torah is saying that the Gidah Nosha would be chal even on a Behemah Tmeah. Well, why do you think that that's true? Because clearly, the very fact that it is an early type of iser that came before Kabbalah Satera makes it more chamur. And therefore, it was Rabbi Yehuda himself who brought up this argument. And that means that now you understand that I was right, or you should, I was right in saying that this is, in fact, an iser chamur. Now, what's curious is that we had this machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon I understand now what your logic was in Rabbi Yehuda. You just explained it to me. But what's the logic of Rabbi Shimon? How would Rabbi Shimon say that you're not chayav anything? That's weird. So how did that go?